Right, good evening, everyone. Today's Daf and Sanhedrin, or I should say better, tomorrow's Daf and Sanhedrin is Pei Zion. Good feel to everyone, aside from this being a special day for the Jewish people. It's also, for me, has special significance. This is tonight's the yahrzeit for my grandmother, Malka Bas Chaim, Neshama Shehav and Aliyah. Okay, we start with the Mishnah. We are on Pei Vav Amid Beis, and we're starting with the Mishnah, Zaken Mamre. So get to the exciting topic of a Zaken Mamre. Exciting, in other words, we're talking about death and execution, so I use the word exciting with a little bit of reservation, but still it's exciting in that we're going to be learning exactly what qualifies somebody as a Zaken Mamre, where he's rebelling against the Beis Din. Beis Din has a certain psak. He knows the Beis Din has a certain psak. He nevertheless is obstinate, and he's still ruling against the Beis Din. And as a result of that, he's going to be subject to Mises Bidei Adam. He's going to be subject to capital punishment. And specifically that of Chenek, he's going to get execution. He's going to get strangulation. So this is number two in the list of Averis of this Perek, in which someone is going to be subject to execution. The first one, Maka Avivimo. Sorry, this is number three. First one is Maka Avivimo, somebody who hits his mother and his father. Second one is Gonev Nefesh Meisol, someone who kidnaps. So in the last couple of days, we discussed the details regarding these two Averis of the Torah, in which someone's subject to capital punishment. And now we're up to number three, and that's Zaken Mamre. It was somebody who rebels against the Beis Din. So the Mishnah over here gives actually a lot of detail regarding what exactly qualifies somebody as being a Zaken Mamre. Zaken Mamre api Beis Din. So Zaken Mamre means he has to go against. Mamre means he's rebelling against Beis Din. In other words, it's not just simply Stam, he's arguing with somebody. That in of itself is not does not bring about an capital punishment. But in other words, Beis Din is issued a psak, and he's going against the Beis Din. Shenemar chi yipalei mimcha davar l'mishpat. So if something is, yipalei literally means wondrous, but in this regard it means he's going against a clear psak of the Beis Din. Now, the Mishnah over here gives us the exact protocol in terms of what's going to happen. Meaning, so this person now has an issue that is open for discussion and debate, and Beis Din has offered a clear and unambiguous ruling. What exactly are the parameters? What exactly happened? So here we have a lot of detail, a lot of description. Shosh about the dinam hayusham. So as you are now progressing, both geographically and physically into the Beis HaMikdash, you're also elevating in status from one basin to another. Right? Much like in our country, we have lower courts and then you have the Supreme Court. So back then, same thing. You had two subordinate courts, and then you got to the Beis Din HaGadol, you got to the major court, which is the Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin, as we all know, is located in the Azar. It's actually located in the temple courtyard. What we're about to learn together is that there were two subordinate courts that were also in Yerushalayim, but geographically lower, and also just even from a status point, even lower as well. So, Hayusham Echad Yoshev al Pesach Harabais, one was at the entrance of the Harabais. So, those of you who know the geography of the area of the Beis HaMikdash, so there's the city of Yerushalayim with a wall around it, and then above that, meaning interior to that, you have the Harabais. The Harabais was also framed by a wall, and what the Mishnah here is describing is that the entrance of this Beis Din was by the foot of the wall of the Harabais. If you look at Rashi over here in the Mishnah, so Rashi says, not exactly, so Rashi describes it as Hushar Mizrachi Shlefnim Menachal. Lifnei Ezos Nashim. So Rashi here puts it slightly more interior in front of the Ezos Nashim. Okay, anyway. So this is court number one. Ve'echa Yoshev al-Pesach Azar, ve'echa Yoshev al-Lishkas Agazis. Court number two is at the entrance of the Azara, and court number three is actually in the Lishkas Agazis. Court number three is the one we're most familiar with. That's the Sanhedrin. So now we go over procedurally. Here's what's going to happen. Bain Lezesh al-Pesach Harabai. So you get to court number one. So court number one, which is at the foot of the Harabai, or the foot of the Ezos Nashim, whatever the case is, Ve'omer. And now you're sitting in front of court number one and you're basically saying, here, look, I have a debate with my colleagues. Now I publicly expanded my position and they publicly have expanded their position. Well, who's right? So now if this lowest court, now lowest court here meaning in the Beis HaMikdash, in the area of the Beis HaMikdash, so already you are at a higher court, just not the highest. So if this court knows what the conclusion is and knows how Beis Din is passing on this issue, so then fine. So they're going to declare so. If they don't know, so then you send them up. The Omer Kach the Rashi, and now we're at court number two. Court number two, which is at the entrance of the Azara. The Omer Kach the Rashi, v'kach du shu chavirai, kach limadati v'kach limdu chavirai. This is what I said, this is what my friend said. Im shamu amalahem v'im lav, So now, if they know court number two, so great. So then they're going to tell them, here's what we know. If they don't know, so Elu ve'elu ban le'beisin, everyone's going to go to Beisin. Rashi says over here, who's everybody? Meaning not only are the disputants going to go to the Beisin, but also the courts themselves. Meaning, so we have now stumped two courts, two of the lower courts. They should know what the halach is in this regard. So this is now going to give them the experience. All of them, meaning, says Rashi, both the disputants and the members of the Beisin, they're all going to now head up to the Beisin Agado, Sheb Elishkas Agazes. Shememene Yosei Torah L'chol Yisrael. That is the source of Torah. Shenemra Menakam Ahu Ashevcha Hashem. Chazor Le'iro. So now, the Mishnah doesn't say this, but it's kind of obvious, but let's spell it out. They're going to get a definitive answer. The disputants are going to get a definitive answer. The lower Beisins are going to get the definitive answer. The Sanhedrin is going to issue a clear psak. Now, Chazor Le'iro. So now you have the disputants going back to the city. Now, up until this point in time, the minority position has been espousing his viewpoint. But right now, it didn't go against Beis Din. From this point going forward, now it's going against Beis Din. So if this one disputant now is going to be still holding his position, even though now he knows that it's going against Beis Din, so now he could be in trouble. Trouble, I mean, chenek. And the Mishnah over here is going to explain what exactly he has to say in order to get into that kind of trouble. If he's just teaching his position like he taught previously, so at that point in time, he's exempt. Is it right? Like I've said already a number of times in this parak, certainly not right, meaning once he knows Beis Din has not taken that position, he shouldn't teach that position anymore. But just teaching that position in of itself does not warrant an execution. Im horilasos, however, if somebody comes over and says, what should I do? And he paskins now, and now he's paskining against what the Beis Din has paskined. So Chayiv, now he's subject to the punishment of Zakim Mamre, and now he's eligible to Chenek. In order to be subject to the penalty of Chenek, it has to be a Hora, it has to be an actual issuing of a Halacha after knowing that Beis Din ruled otherwise. Talmud Shahar Lasos Pater. Now, let's say he's just a student. So we're not talking about somebody who is a posek, but we're talking about a student. What is going to be the differentiation between a Talmud and a posek and a student? So Rashi over here records 40 years of age. Under 40 years of age, so he's not going to be a posek. Interesting over here that Rashi takes a very clear position that that being under 40 years of age, you can certainly learn, but you're not in a position where you can actually paskin. After 40 years of age, now you can paskin. So let's say this person's under 40 years of age. He's not eligible to paskin. So shahor lasos pater. So simply because he's not qualified, that now is going to give him an exemption. Nimsa chumro kulo. So the Mishnah points out now the irony that because we're machmir with him, machmir meaning you're not eligible to paskin, so therefore his psak doesn't register as a psak. And even though he has heard what the Beis Din said and rebelled against the Beis Din, so he's not going to be subject to Chenek simply because he's not in a position where he can pass in the halacha. It only begs the question, by the way, how did he ever go to the procedure of going up to court number three, court number two, court number one? If his psak is never a psak, so then why are we even here to begin with? Okay, that's fair. It's fair to ask, but anyway, but the point being is that if for whatever reason he tried to psak paskin because he was underage, so therefore his psak doesn't register as a psak, and therefore he's not going to be subject to chenek. Tanu Rabbanan. We start with the brayso. We're on the very bottom of Peivav Amud Beis. Ki palem imcha davar. So b'mufla shebebeis in akasim edaber. So first of all, in order to qualify as this rebellious sage, so you have to be a sage. In other words, mufla. You have to be somebody who is outstanding. You can't just simply be anybody, as we already described in the Mishnah. You can't even be a Talmud, right? Talmud's not just anybody. Talmud's somebody who's learning. But even that doesn't qualify. You have to be somebody who is an individual that can paskin. But mufosh bebeis nakaz medaber mimcha zeyoetz. Now, here, as we're going to go through the psukim, we're marching through the psukim that describe in the Torah the Zakim Rami. This is found in Parsha Shoftim. So now, every word is going to be darshan to an area of halacha where they're disputing over. So, mimcha is a yowetz. So the mimcha is a reference to a yowetz, meaning, what is he disputing the Beis Din on? Ibrashana. We know, we have already discussed this in the first paragraph of Sanhedrin, there is going to be a Beis Din required in order to establish whether or not we're going to add a 13th month in the year. Nowadays, we have a fixed calendar, we have a fixed cycle, we know exactly when that Ibra Yar is going to come about, but back in the good old days, before the calendar was fixed, so this was done ad hoc. It was done as necessary. So if, let's say, in the month of Adar, what is, you know, what could be Adar Aleph, depending if they had another month or not. So in Adar Aleph, now you have a dispute between the Beis Din and an individual. Beis Din says, either we're going to add or we're not going to add. And then the individual says, I disagree with you. And he goes back and he rules against the Beis Din. So that would be an area in Halacha where he's subject to Zaken Mamre. V'cheinu Omer, the Gemara just quotes another pasuk that speaks to this idea that the word Mimcha is a reference to advisement of the calendar. Yotze Choshev al Hashem Ra'a Yoetz Belial. So the Gemara records the pasuk over here, which describes, it's a pasuk in Nachum, which describes that the word Mimcha can be referring to somebody making a calculation, and the Gemara is assuming that that's referring to the calendar. Next, Davar. Zu halacha. So Dover is a reference to halacha. Seemingly what the Brisa means is that if something is a halacha l'moshe m'sinai, in fact, Rashi adds the words halacha l'moshe m'sinai, so he's disputing a matter that's not even written in the Torah, but still part of the tradition, part of the Torah Shebaal Peh. Halacha l'moshe m'sinai, if he's disputing that matter, he could be subject to Zaken Mamre. L'mishpat zehadam, I'm sorry, zehadin. Mishpat is reference to a judgment. If he's arguing on a matter of judgment, Rashi describes what does that mean, judgment, in this context. Rashi writes, "Nechlag b'davar halamid b'din gzereshava gamhu ne'erag." So let's say the Beis Din comes up with a gzereshava, or has a tradition of a gzereshava, and this person disagrees with a gzereshava, or maybe he learns it differently. Whatever the case is, that also could be subject to zaken mamre. Bein dam ladam, bein dam nida ladam leida, dam ziva. Dam ziva. Three areas of blood where he could be disputing them on, and again, in any one of these three cases, the halacha is going to be, is that assuming that he takes a position that runs counter to them, after they pass on the halacha in any one of these three blood-related matters, so then he could be a zaken mamre. Bein din ladin, bein din nefashos, bein din mamros, din emakos. All three areas of the justice system, capital cases, monetary cases, corporal punishment. Bein nega lenega, tsaras as well. Bein nega adam, nega batam, nega begadim. We know there are three areas of tsaras. One that afflicts the individual, one the house, and the other is the clothing. If he has a dispute on any one of these three matters, so again, could be subject to a zaken mamre. Divrei, elu acharam va'arachim va'agdeshos. The word divrei is a reference to having a dispute regarding basically sanctifying items. Cherem, generally speaking, is property. Erchin is the value of an individual as scheduled in the Torah at the end of Parshas Bechukosai, and Hektesh, making anything chol into Hektesh. So again, if there's a dispute on these matters, so once again, he could become a Zaken Mamre. Rivos, Zu Ashka Sota Varifa Zegla Vataras Mitzora. Anything that has to do with a fight. So if he disputes the Beis Din on something that has to do with a fight, so again, he could become a Zaken Mamre. Three examples the Brisa gives in terms of what is a fight. Number one, Ashka Sota. So your wife becomes a Sota. Obviously, that starts with a fight. Meaning, don't hang out with that guy. I don't like you with that guy. So that starts with a fight. Arifas Egla, the breaking of the neck of the Egla Rufa. Obviously, that also started with a fight. Somebody's dead. We don't know who the killer is. So clearly, that started with a fight. And also, Taurus Mitzora. Interesting. Taurus Mitzora is described as a fight. How is a Taurus Mitzora considered a fight? By him becoming a Mitzora, probably he was a person that fought with people. Remember, generally speaking, we assume that Saras afflicts someone who is involved in Lashon Hara. So over here, if he's a person who is engaging in Lashon Hara, probably a quarrelsome individual. Bisha Arecha, in your gates, Zalaka Shechacha Upea, Upea. Three examples of things that apply in your gate, meaning in your property. So that is the various gifts that are given to the Anim, to the poor people. Like it, you leave any of the sheaves over in your field. Shichacha, you forget a bundle in your field. And pay a corner of your field that's designated to the poor. So again, there's a dispute between one of the members of Beis Din and the rest of Beis Din. And after they paskin, he now rules against them. Once again, he's subject to Zaken Mamre. V'kamta, mi Beis Din va'alisa. Malam isha Beis HaMikdash gavoh me'er tishol. So the idea that he gets up and he goes to the Sanhedrin. So the way the Bryce understands this is that this is actually a topographical description of continuous ascent. He goes up. He goes to the Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash gavoh me'er tishol, ve'er tishol gavoh mikol ha'arotzos. That the Beis HaMikdash is higher than the rest of Eretz Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael is higher than all the other lands. Now, it happens to be that topographically, it's not necessarily the case. Various ways to explain it, but in the meantime, we're going to go on. El Hamakom, Malam Isha Hamakom Gorem. meaning it's the makom, meaning the way to become a zaken mamre is by going against the psak of basin that was issued from the area of the Beis HaMikdash. And that has to become an essential factor in terms of someone becoming eligible to be zaken mamre. Period. Ad kan divrei ha-braisa. So that takes us now to the end of the braisa. So what the braisa did for us is basically take us on a tour of many various areas of halacha. And the basic idea is that if you have a zaken mamre who is rebelling against the psak of the basin on any one of these matters, so he's eligible to become a zaken mamre. Now, as far as elevation is concerned, the Gemara says the Beis HaMikdash higher than the rest of Eretz Yisrael. Dechsev Alisa El Ve'Alisa. We know that because the Torah, whenever describing Aliyah L'Regel, in fact, encrypted in the word Aliyah L'Regel is to go up. So you already have the language of the Torah supporting this idea that the Beis HaMikdash is higher. El Eretz Yisrael Gavo Mikol Arotz is Minale. But how do I know that Eretz Yisrael is higher than all other lands? Beautiful pasuk in Yirmiyahu describing that when we get to the Geula Shlema and we all go back to Eretz Yisrael, we're going to be so thankful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're going to forget about Geulas Mitzrayim, meaning that will be in the rearview mirror. We're going to say, Kadosh Baruch Hu, you took us out of this galus that we've been, after 2,000 years of this galus, so one can only imagine the joy we're going to experience when doing so. And the Navi Yirmiyahu is describing, it's going to be that joyous. We're only interested in this pasuk of Yirmiyahu because, Asher ha'alave, Asher ha'vi. Meaning that even as we're describing the rest of the world, we're still ascending to Eretz Yisrael. So once again, a clear pasuk that indicates that Eretz Yisrael is higher than all other lands. One pshat I did hear, I don't have a source, so I can't properly quote it. One source I did hear in terms of Eretz Yisrael, and for that matter, Yerushalayim being the height, when we know from just a simple elevation standpoint, it's not the highest, but what we could suggest, again, I don't know who to give the credit to this, is that when the world was created from the center point of the world, meaning we know that the world is round, contrary to, you know, some people recently who suggested otherwise, but the earth is round, and assuming that the starting point of where the earth was created was from Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, Beis HaMikdash, the Evan Shesia, the area in the Azara where the Kodesh HaKadoshim is placed, where the Aron is placed on top of, so assuming that the world was created from that point, so basically from that point, assuming that that's the starting point, so everything can be viewed in a downward trajectory from there. Okay, anyway, I heard such a pshat. Tanu Rabbanan. Zaken Mamre. So here now we're going to quote now our second brice of the day. In this second brice, we're going to be discussing who exactly is going to be eligible to become a Zaken Mamre. Now I know we already learned the brice that gave us very clear examples, but here in this brice, they're going to have three opinions, and within these three opinions, they're going to categorically give different definitions of who can become a Zaken Mamre. Opinion number one. Zaken Mamre no chayv ala al davashez don akarish v'shigas v'chatzas divra meir. First, the opinion of Rav Meir. To become a Zaken Mamre, you have to argue with the Beis Din on an Avera that is punishable by Kares or Karban Chatas. Same thing. Meaning, an Isser Kares if done intentionally, a Chiv Karban Chatas if done b'shogeg. So in other words, it has to be that kind of Avera. Now, there are not that many out there. In fact, we know the Mishnah Krisus, the first Mishnah Krisus, tells us that there are only 36 Averos which are subject to Chiv Kares. And even 36, by the way, is not accurate. It's really 34, because two of them are mitzvah essay. But anyway, 34 averos in the Torah which are subject to the Kares penalty. According to Rav Meir, a person's only in Zaken Mamre if his dispute is on one of these 34. Anything else in the Torah is not going to be subject to becoming a Zaken Mamre. It would therefore seem, I mean, there are two more opinions to go in this brisa, it would therefore seem that Rav Meir does not agree with the previous brisa, because the previous brisa gave a number of examples, many of them seemingly having nothing to do with an Issa Kares. Stay tuned. That point that I just made right now is going to really be the remainder of today's daf. But let's just get through opinions numbers 2 and 3 in the brisa. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, al davash ikaro mi divrei Torah, upirusha mi divrei Sofrim. Rabbi Yehuda expands who becomes a Zaken Mamre. You become a Zaken Mamre when you're arguing something which at least in essence is in the Torah. Meaning there's a pasuk alluding to it in the Torah. Now, it may need rabbinic commentary in order to explain it. When I say rabbinic, it could also just simply be part of the Torah Shabbat Peh. But in other words, there may be supplemental information, but There's a pasuk in the Torah that spells it out. That is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Shimon Amar Afilu Diktuk Echad Midiktuke Sofrim. And Rabbi Shimon says, even if totally detached from the Torah Shebechsav, even if it's Torah Shebaal Peh, now it could even be including Dinei Derabbanan. Unclear. The Gemara doesn't say that. But it could be. But certainly the point being is that even if it's not something which is explicitly written in Torah Shebechsav, but we know it to be the case based on Torah Shebaal Peh, or just simply based on a psak given by the Beis Din, if you have somebody who rebels against that, he's eligible to become a Zaken Mamre. So we have now three opinions over here in this Brisa. Number one, the first opinion is that a Zaken Mamre is only someone who disputes a Isser Kares. That's Rabbi Meir. Number two, a Zaken Mamre is only somebody who disputes anything that's explicitly written in the Torah. And then opinion number three, and that of Rabbi Shimon, is that even Diktuke Sofrim. Diktuke Sofrim meaning anything that is part and parcel of Torah, Torah Shebechsav, and Torah Shebapeh, and even if you can't find in Torah Shebechsav, still, he would be a Zaken Mamre. Just a simple example, by the way, as long as we're in Sukkos, a simple example would be Nisach HaMayim. We pour water on the Mizbeach all 7 days of Sukkos. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash nowadays, so we don't do that. But that's a mitzvah in the Torah. Where can you find that in the Torah? Answer, of course, is you don't find that in the Torah. It's part of Torah Shebapeh. Nevertheless, if you have a Zaken Mamre arguing on that point, according to the last opinion, according to Rabbi Shimon, he can be eligible to become a Zaken Mamre. My time is the Rabbi Meir, so the Gemara now goes through its classic drashas. First, let's start off with the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Gamar davar davar siv hachi ki palei mimcha davar la mishpavik siv hasu v'nealam davar meinei kal ma'alahalam davar shechayvaz donakars v'ashigigas ochatas afkan davar shechayvaz donakars v'ashigigas ochatas. The gzera shava that connects the parsha of Zaken Mamre to the par helam davar shel tzibur. If you have a basin ruling erroneously on an Isser Kares, and the Jewish people follow that psak of Beis Din, a special karban needs to be brought by Beis Din. This is called the Parhelam Davar Shel Tzibur. We know that the Parhelam Davar Shel Tzibur is only on an Isser Kares. So once the Gzera Sheva links the Parsha of Zaken Mamre to the Parsha of Parhelam Davar Shel Tzibur, so we know, at least Rav Meir knows, that the eligibility for Zaken Mamre is only on an Isser Kares. Rav Yehuda, al pi haTorah asher yarucha, adika Torah v'yarucha. Rav Yehuda reads the parsha carefully. It says, al pi haTorah, meaning that what the Zaken Mamre is doing is going against the Torah, meaning that which is written in the Torah. And that's where Rav Yehuda generates his position, where it has to be something which is in the Torah itself, maybe not all of it, but at least some part of it is in the Torah. And Rav Shimon asher yagid lecha min hamakom ahu, afilu kol dehu. Rabbi Shimon focuses on the end of the parsha where it says, "Ashir gidu lacham min hamakom." Anything they say, meaning if the Sanhedrin issues a psak, even if it's not Isser Kares, even if it's not rooted in the Torah, but the Beis Din has a psak, and you, the Zaken Mamre, go against it, so then you're subject to becoming a Zaken Mamre. Okay, so three opinions on the Braisa. What creates eligibility to become a Zaken Mamre? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Shimon. So, for the remainder of today's daf, here's going to be the challenge. The challenge is going to be, we have so far in today's daf seen two brisas. Brisa number one takes us through many different averes in the Torah, where if you have a sage who is rebelling against the Beis Din, he can become a Zaken Mamre. And then in brisa number two, there are three opinions, Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda, and Rabbi Shimon. Can it be that the first brisa is reflecting the viewpoint of Rav Meir? It's very hard to suggest that. Because Rav Meir says in order to become a Zaken Mamre, you have to argue on something which is a Isser Kares. Many of the examples that were given in the first Brisa do not seem to be an Isser Kares. So here's the question, here's the challenge, and it will take the rest of today's daf and tomorrow's daf. You understand. Today's daf and tomorrow's daf, the next two dafim, how about that? To basically see if we could settle this challenge. Would Rav Meir of Brisa number two be in agreement with Brisa number one? And here the Gemara starts the discussion. Amalei Rav Huna Bar Chinana leRav v'tikar mi leila hamasisan alibad Rav Meir. Can you explain to me Brisa number one according to Rav Meir? So Amalei Rav leRav Papa pok tirgam alei. So Rav says to Rav Papa, I give you the challenge. Go and explain Brisa number one according to Rav Meir. So here's what we're going to do now. We're going to go back and review Brisa number one. We don't have to do it inside. The Gemara is going to do it for us. We're going to go back and review Brisa number one, and in every one of the cases of the Brisa, we're going to discover how it could lead to the possible violation of an Isser Kares, where according to Rav Meir, that's the standard in terms of becoming a Zaken Mamre. So here we go. So, first of all, the first halacha, you have to be a mufla. You have to be somebody who can paskin halacha in order to become mizakin mamre. Fine. That doesn't need any reinterpretation. Now, mimcha, ze yoitz. Sheyodeh la'aber shanim l'kvoh chadashim. Kidnan. Hein ha'idu shema'avir nasashana kol adar sheyo'omrim adapurim. Now, here we go now. Challenge number one. Ibershana. The intercalation of a year. Fancy terminology for just simply describing adding an extra month. So, how can there be a debate about the addition of an extra month? And again, the challenge is, and how can that lead to an isakaris? So first of all, where's the room for debating? The room for debating is the following. Remember, in the good old days, right, before 1700 years ago, in the good old days, the addition of the extra month was done ad hoc. In the month of Adar, as needed. We already learned together in the first parak of Sanhedrin what are the various factors that went into the consideration of adding an extra month. So here we are now in the month of Adar. Are we going to be adding an extra month? Well, we have to see. When during Adar are we going to be having this discussion, deliberation of adding an extra month? And that extra month is going to be Adar Beis. So there are really two opinions. The first opinion, which is the accepted opinion, is that you have the entirety of the month of Adar. Except for the 30th day of Adar, which we already discussed back in the first parak. 30th day of Adar is already too late, since that could potentially be the first day of Nisan. But barring that last day of Adar, if Beis Din were to decide any time during the month of Adar, we're going to add another month, so then they have the right to do so. There is another opinion, however, that says that only up until Purim. After Purim, Beis Din no longer has the ability to deliberate and add another month. And I'll tell you the truth, the second opinion actually has a lot of ring to it. It makes sense. In that, consider, we are trained very clearly every year. Purim, 30 days later, is Pesach. So if we're celebrating Purim, so then the normal habit of us Jewish people is to assume that in a little more than 4 weeks from now is going to be Pesach. And so therefore, if after Purim, Beis Din made a deliberation and decision to add another month, so it could be confusing to a lot of people. Because how could we have celebrated Purim, and meanwhile Pesach is not going to be for another month and a half, possibly 2 months? So it is confusing. So there actually are two opinions in terms of when is the deadline of deliberation and decision of adding an extra month in the year. So let's say Beis Din passing like one of these opinions, and the rebellious sage passing like another opinion. This could lead to an Issur Kares. Gemara goes on to explain. Here we go. Let's say Beis Din ruled on the 20th day of Adar, we're going to add another month. And the rebellious sage says, no, it's too late, you can't do it. So now what's going to happen? The next month, according to the Chachamim, is not Pesach. And according to this rebellious sage, is going to be Pesach. So now what's the rebellious sage going to be telling everyone in his local town? He's going to tell everyone, this first month is Pesach. I know the Beis Din said it's Adar Beis, but I can't be. I disagree with them. So now he's telling everybody that it's Pesach. What's he going to be saying a month from now? It's Iyar. We're in the middle of Iyar. He'll be telling people in the middle of the month of Iyar to go ahead and eat Chametz. Even though, of course, the halacha is, that's not Iyar. That's Nisan. It's Pesach. So here could be a situation where they're arguing about Iber Shana, but of course it could result in an Issur Kares, because the rebellious sage is going to be telling people on what actually is Pesach, that it's not Pesach, and therefore you can eat Chametz. Okay? And eating Chametz on Pesach is an Issur Kares. There we go. Hurdle number one. And that's what we're going to be doing for the rest of this daf. It's just basically going hurdle after hurdle. How can all these Averas arrive at an Issur Kares? Davrezeh, here we go, number two. Davrezeh halacha. Zu hilchos echad asar. So this is the halacha of day 11. De Itmar, Asiri, Rav Yochanan Amar Asiri Kachi, Rav Shimon Melakish Amar Asiri Keachad Asar. So the machlokis is between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish in terms of how to treat day 10. Is day 10 treated like day 9, or is day 10 treated like day 11? So over here, a little bit of background. Okay, before I go over the background, disclaimer. This disclaimer is going to be covering everything I'm saying from this point going forward. Everything I'm describing right now is the halacha in the Torah. We are machmir upon ourselves. We do not follow the halacha as per the Torah's instructions, but we follow the halacha as per the chumrah. The chumrah is mentioned in the Gemara Nida. The chumrah is mentioned by the Gaonim. The chumrah is mentioned by the Shulchan Aruch. It's not just the chumrah; it's the way we pass in the halacha. But everything I'm saying is Aliba de Torah. So, with that stated, so what does the Torah say regarding a woman? A woman goes on a cycle of 7-11. 7 days where if she sees blood during the first 7 days, that's Damnida. 11 subsequent days after that, she's not expected to see any blood. Any discharge of blood that comes out of her is what is considered Damziva, not Damnida. Now, Min HaTorah, what's the halacha? The halacha is that during her Yemei Nida, during those 7 days, any blood she sees is considered Damnida. And then, after day seven, on the eve of day eight, she tovels in the mikvah, she's mutter to her husband. She's muteris to her husband. If she stops bleeding on day seven. That's the halacha min HaTorah. Now, let's turn to the next 11 days. The next 11 days are Yemei Ziva. What happens during the next 11 days? If she sees blood on three consecutive days during those next 11 days, she's what is called a Zava Gadola. As a Zava Gadola, she now needs to weigh Shiva Nakim, seven clean days. After that, she tovels in the mikvah. On day eight, she'll bring karbanos. Okay. Now, what if she sees blood only 1 or 2 days during her Yemei Ziva? So then what she has to do is she has to wait one clean day. That is what's called in halacha Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom. So let's say, for example, she sees blood on day 5 of day 11. So day 5 now she's Tamea. And also day 6, she's also Tamea. If day 6 goes by without any discharge whatsoever, she tovels in the mikvah, and she's muter to her husband on the eve of day 7. Okay, that's the halacha Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom. If the example that I just illustrated, where she saw Dam on day 5, and day 6, she has relations with her husband, that is an Isser of the Torah. That, in fact, is an Isser Kares of the Torah. Okay, because she has to be on that day 6, Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom. So far, so good. Now, here's what we know to be the case, and this is Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. Let's say she sees blood on day 11. Now, day 11 is the end of her 11-day cycle. After day 11, if she sees blood on day 12, that's not day 12. Day 12 is considered the next day, or I should say better, the first day of her Nida cycle. So there's no such thing in Yemei Ziva as day 12. If she sees blood on day 11, so as long as she stops discharging on day 11, on day 12, she's muteris to her husband. Meaning there is no halacha for her of Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom. Now if she bleeds on day 12, so that's day 1 of her Yemei Nida. But there is no requirement, if she sees blood on day 11, for her to be considered the next day a Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom. That's clear, and everyone agrees to that. Here's where we have disagreement. Disagreement is, what if she has discharge on day 10? If she has a discharge on day 10, does she need to be a Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom on day 11? Well, let's consider. Meaning, if she has a discharge on day 10, so can she become a Zava Gadola? The answer, of course, is no. Because to become a Zava Gadola, you have to have three consecutive days of bleeding during her Yemei Ziva. It's impossible. Meaning, on day 10 and day 11, she may be discharging, but day 12 is not day 12. Day 12 is always going to be considered day 1 of the next cycle. So it's impossible for her to have three consecutive days of Yemei Ziva. So now, if she discharges on day 10, does she need to now wait the next day as a Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom? And this is a machlokus between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. And now we can see it again inside. Rav Yochanan Amar, let me start again. The Idmar, 4 lines from the bottom on Pezayin Amad Aleph. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Asiri Kichi. Rabbi Yochanan says that day 10 is considered like day 9. Just like on day 9, if she discharged, she for sure is going to have to be Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom on day 10. Rabbi Yochanan says the same thing is true regarding day 10. If she discharges on day 10, day 11 becomes her Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom. Rabbi Shimon Ben Lakish Amar Asiri Ka'acharasar. And Reish Lakish says no, that day 10 is like day 11. Just like on day 11, there's no halacha of Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom, so too on day 10, there's no halacha of Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom. According to Reish Lakish, that means that if she discharged on day 10, and day 11 she had no discharge whatsoever, on day 11, according to Reish Lakish, she would be muteris to her husband. Meanwhile, according to Rav Yochanan, she would be asura to her husband. And so now, this is not a hurdle. This is now a simple question of, is this woman considered a ziva to her husband on day 11 if she discharged on day 10? Yes, Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan would say it's aser with an iser kares. Yes, Reish Lakish, he would tell you muteris legamre. So here's a simple case now where I have a halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. Everything here is halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. None of this is spelled out in the Torah, and it's a question of halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, which obviously the ramifications of this debate would be in iser kares. So you can have now the Beis Din Paskin like Rav Yochanan, the Zakin Mamre Paskin like Reish Lakish, And this would be a case where the Zaken Mamre is now ruling against the Beis Din that could lead to an Issur Kares. Next. Did I finish reading it? Yeah. Rav Yochanan Amar Asir Kishim, Achim Baishimur, Afasir Baishimur. Reish Lakish Amar Asir Kacharasar, Ma'acharasar Lo Baishimur, Afasir Lo Baishimur. Fine. Mishpat Zeha Din. Now, Mishpat is a reference to Din. Now, when we say Din over here, we don't mean judgment. We mean Din in the context of using one of the Yud Gimel Midos Shatar Nejeshas Behem. Let's use the example of Gzeira Shava. What halacha was learned out through Gzeira Shava? If you remember, not so long ago, we learned together, the halacha that was learned out from Gzeira Shava is a man's daughter, but not his wife's daughter. What does that mean? It means that he had a daughter out of wedlock. Bito me'anu saso. The Torah never says that such a daughter is usher to him, and the Torah does not explicitly call this an erva min haTorah. However, if you remember, there are those who are of the opinion, using a double gzera shava, that arrive at the conclusion that his own daughter, even though it is not his wife's daughter, is asura to him, and she's an erva to him. But that's only if you learn the double gzera shava. So now, bito me'anusasa, we're on the top of Pei Zayin Amud Beis. The Amar Rav Amalei Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdumi Asya Hina Hina Asya Zima Zima. So Rav Yitzchak teaches us his double gzera shava that arrives us at the conclusion that such a woman is an erva to you. But that's only if you hold of the double gzera shava. So again, the Beis Din is paskin like this double gzera shava, which means that the man's daughter is an erva. The Zaken Mamre is saying, I don't hold of this gzera shava. And he's saying she is not an erva. And so once again, a debate that can easily lead to an Issur Kares. Bein dam ladam, bein dam nida, dam leida, dam ziva. Okay, so now, three areas in halacha where they're having a debate over dam, and again, all of them are going to arrive in an Issur Kares. Because that's the challenge. The challenge is, every one of the cases can result in an Issur Kares. So dam nida beplukta akavya ben mahalalel v'rabanan. Didnan dam ayarak akavya ben mahalal metame, v'chacham metarim. If I have dama yarok, now yarok in the Gemara is always open for a debate in terms of whether that's the color green or the color yellow, right? As long as we're in Sukkah, so we know the Gemara in the third parak of Sukkah describes the esrog as being yarok, right? Does that mean green? Does that mean yellow? Here, in terms of the discharge that the woman's having, so we could either be talking about a green discharge or a yellow discharge. Here's what color for sure we're not describing, and that's red. Meaning typically, as the Gemara Nida tells us, blood is red. Blood could also be black as well, as the Gemara Nida tells us, but the color of blood is for sure is red. But let's say a woman has a discharge of either something that's green or yellow. Okay? Whichever one Yarok is. So Akavya ben Mahalal says, that's Dam Nida, and she's Tameya. And the Chachamim say, no, she's Tahara. And now, as Rashi points out over here, what would be an example where the Zaken Mamre is ruling against the Chachamim? Let's say the Zaken Mamre holds like Akavya ben Mahalal. Which means that, let's say on Monday she has a yellow discharge. So the Zaken Mamre says, oh, that's day one of her Yemei Nida. Now again, like I explained a couple minutes earlier, Min HaTorah, she's only a Nida from that day for the next 7 days. That means that 7 days from that first discharge, assuming that she stops bleeding, she's Muteris to her husband. That's if you held like a Kavya Ben Mahalal. If you hold like the Chachamim, the yellow discharge was nothing. If only upon the red discharge does she become a Nida. If the red discharge, let's say, for example, happens 2 days later, so now, according to the Chachamim, her Yemei Nida do not start until the red discharge, not the yellow discharge. So now, here's a simple example where, if I held like a Kavya Ben Mahalal, so the Zaken Mamre would tell her, you can count 7 days from the yellow discharge and you're good to your husband, and you're Muteris. And if you held like the Chachamim say, what are you talking about? No, the yellow discharge is nothing. You have to count from the red discharge, and if that happened a couple days later, that's the beginning of a Yemei Nida. So again, a simple debate where, obviously, it would result into an Issur Kares. Because according to the Chachamim, the Zaken Mamre is allowing the husband to be with his wife while she's a Nida. Dam Leida, Bepugda de Rav Alevi, Ditmar. Now, Dam Leida. Again, same disclaimer. This is according to the Torah. We are machmer to this at this day and age. And when I say we're machmer, I mean we've been machmer at least for a millennia, probably even longer. But anyway, the Torah says that when a woman gives birth to a male, to a son, so she is tamea for 7 days, and the next 33 days she's muteris to her husband, even if she is bleeding during those next 33 days. If she gave birth to a girl, 14 days where she's asura, and the next 66 days she's muteris to her husband. Okay, so this is what's called in the Torah as Dam Tahor. Okay, again, we're machmir, but according to the Torah, a husband and wife can be together during this Yemei Tohar. Now, Rav Amar Mayin Echad Hu, HaTorah Mitim Aso, HaTorah Tiar Aso. Levi Amar Shnei Mayin Otem, Nistanatami Niftach HaTar, Nistamatar Niftach HaTame. Seemingly, what we have is an anatomical debate between Rav and Levi. Like I say a number of times, it's not my Masorah to explain the Gemara based on some sort of physiological anatomical debate, but over here, it certainly seems that way, where they're debating in terms of what exactly is happening in terms of the Dam Tahor, Dam Tame. Are those coming from two different sources of our body, or no? Maybe it's coming from the same source, it just happens to be. Day 7, the Torah says it's Tame. On day 8, and assuming it was a boy, Torah says it's Tahor. So that's the machlokas between Rav and Levi. How will this machlokas now play out? So let's say she had a boy. On day 40, she's discharging blood, which again, on day 40, she's still in her Yemei Tahor. So now that's Dam Tahor. Now, if you subscribe to the viewpoint that there are two different sources of the blood, so that means that in order for the Dam to go from Dam Tahor to back to Dam Tame, there has to be a stoppage, and there has to be new discharge coming out on day 41. Otherwise, if it's the same source, and we know that empirically because there was no stoppage of the flow, if it's the same source, it's still Yemei Tahor. But that's only if you assume that it's Shtei Mayanos. If you hold it's Mayan Echad, it doesn't matter whether there was a pause in the discharge. In other words, from day 40 to day 41, she goes from being Tahor to being Tame. So here again, if the Zaken Ramre rules against the Beis Din, so here you have a situation where the Zaken Ramre is telling this man, you know, it's okay. In other words, there was no stoppage of the blood, therefore it's fine. And he's having relations with his wife while she's in Edom. Okay. Dam Ziva. And one more debate to go over on this issue, and that's Plukta Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Yeshua did not. Kishasa Shoshayamim B'Tzochachar Asayom. If, let's say, a woman is going through labor pains during her 11 days of Yemei Ziva, like I described earlier this evening, a woman goes on the schedule 7-11. 7 days where she's an Ida, and the next 11 days where she is a Zava. Like I explained earlier this evening, if she bleeds on 3 consecutive days during her Yemei Ziva, she now becomes a Zava Gedola. If, however, the bleeding is coming as a result of delivery, if let's say she's bleeding, but as a result of labor, so then that blood is not considered Yemei Ziva, and she's not considered a Zava Gedola. How do I know? It's very simple. In other words, she bleeds, and that bleeding leads to the delivery of a child. If that's the case, so clearly that's not Dam Ziva, and she is not a Zava Gedola. What if? What if she bleeds during her 11 days, and it seems to be that we're at the end of her term, she is seemingly going into labor, but then she has a considerable break, where she stops contracting, she stops laboring, and for 24 hours now, she goes into a period of calm, with no discharge. And then she delivers the baby. So does that now force us to look back at that discharge, those 3 days of discharge, and basically say, those weren't labor discharges, those were regular Zava discharges. And the halacha is that if there's a 24-hour break between the labor and the actual delivery, so then we go back to those 3 days of discharge, and we call that Yemei Ziva. And she is what in halacha is referred to as a Yoledes Bezov. She has now given birth, but she's a Zava Gedola. Which means that after going through the entire Leda sequence, she's also going to have to count Shiva Nekiyam for her being a Zava Gedola. Okay. Im Shafsa Me'es Leis V'yalda Harezei Yoledes Bezov Divrei Rebbe Elazar. And what I just described is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, which is 24-hour break in the discharge during her labor, and then she delivers. So that means that the bleeding was not labor-induced bleeding, but rather just regular Zava bleeding, and therefore she's a Zava Gedola. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Laila V'yom, Kelele Shabbos V'yomo. Now Rabbi Yoshua says, yes, 24 hours, but it also has to be another factor, which is a night and the following day. So it has to be both. In other words, you have to check both boxes. One, it has to be 24 hours. And two, it also has to be an evening and the day. According to Rabbi Yoshua, if let's say she stopped bleeding midday, 12 noon, and then she delivered the baby 24 hours from now. So from Rabbi Yoshua's standpoint, that's not considered a break. A break is where it's 24 hours and you also pass through an evening and the day. So, Shabbat v'yom sheshavtem netzar v'lo min adam. Fine. So that is another machlokus. And again, if the Zakin Mamre takes one of these positions contrary to the Beis Din, so basically what he's then going to be ruling is that the woman, depending on which position he holds, is either going or not going to be a Zava Gadola. And again, he could be mottering a Zava to her husband, and that would be an Eser Karis. Bein Din Ladin, Bein Din Emamnos, Din Nefashos, Din Emakos. Here's where we're going to need creativity. Because again, what was our challenge? Explain every one of the cases of the Braisa according to the opinion of Rameir. How all of them could lead to an Eser Karis. Now, if we're talking about a simple monetary case, how can a monetary case lead to an Eser Karis? Dine Mamanos, Bepulta de Shmuel v'Rabbi Abahu. Da Amar Shmuel Shnaim Shadanu Dine Em Din, El Shanikrim Beis Din Chatzav. Rabbi Abahu Amar L'Divra Kol, Ein Dine Em Din. So we go back to a machlokes that we saw almost at the beginning of the Masechta. Let's say I have a two-panel court. Court made up of two judges. Can they rule? So the answer, of course, is no. In other words, you need three. Okay. So that's if you would have asked me from the beginning. But let's say you had two-panel court who did rule. Is their judgment going to be considered a valid judgment? Shmuel says yes. We'll call them a Beis Din Chatzav, but Shmuel says that their judgment is valid. And Rabbi Abahu says no. Rabbi Abahu says you need three members to make a Beis Din. Anything less than three is not considered a judgment. So now, let's say you had a court of two, and they judged. According to Shmuel, did the money legally go change hands from one litigant to another? Shmuel will say yes. I don't like the Beis Din, but yes. The money legally changed hands. And according to Rabbi Abahu, did the money legally change hands? Rabbi Abahu says no. Meaning the litigant now who has collected is a thief, having money that doesn't belong to him. Now here's where we need to be a little bit creative. Fine. That's just a question of theft. That's not an Issur Kares. How can this lead to an Issur Kares? So, you have to inject a little bit more in the Gemara over here. Rashi does. I'll speak out the Rashi. Now, let's say this person, who according to one opinion has illicitly gained funds. Let's say he's Mekadesh a woman with this money. So now, is it his wife? Depends. If the money belongs to him, it's his wife. If the money doesn't belong to him, it's not his wife. Now, if she commits adultery, is adultery? Well, it depends. If the money was his and it's his wife, then an extramarital affair would be an extramarital affair. If the money didn't belong to him, it's not his wife, and therefore it's not an extramarital affair. You have to add in that next step in order to get from where we're having a debate on a monetary issue to a potential Issur Karis. Admittedly, it requires creativity. It requires a little bit of a drama. But it's possible to get from here to an Issur Karis. Dina nefashos beplotet derabbi v'rabbanan. Detanya Rabbi Omer v'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh. Mamon. So, here we go now, a question of Dine nefashos. How can Dine nefashos lead to a possible Issur Karis? So again, a little bit of creativity. Let's say a person unintentionally kills not the intended victim, but an unintended victim, like we described just a couple days ago in the Daf. He was looking to hit somebody, and by accident hit somebody else. Right? In the Skaven laharogetzeh vaharogetzeh. So, does he have to pay money to the family of the unintended victim? Yes or no? As we saw just a short couple days ago in the Daf, machlokas. Rebbe says, v'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh, mamon. Rebbe's of the opinion that he's got to pay money to the family of the victim, of the unintended victim. So now, remember this is a drasha that Rebbe Darshan. To put it succinctly, Rebbe says that according to Rebbe, you have to pay money. Now the Chachamim disagree with this position. What is the Chachamim's position? As we already discussed before, the Chachamim are going to take the position of, this is Kimle B'derabimine. In other words, since he was a murderer, so therefore he doesn't have to pay the family money. So now, if he pays the family money, so one opinion says that's right, meaning he should, and another opinion says no, he shouldn't. So here we have now an example of money changing hands from one party to another. Is that legally the other party's money, yes or no? Rebbe would say it is, the Chachamim would say it isn't. And now we go back to the previous creativity of, and now if he takes that money and is mekadesh a woman with that money, is it his wife, yes or no? Again, depends whether the money that he received was legally gained or illegally gained. And again, if that woman commits adultery, is that adultery? Well, it depends. And again, you just have to insert that creativity. Dine makos beplugta de Rebbe Yishmael v'rabbana dena makos begimel mishum Rebbe Yishmael amru bechav gimel. Again, first daf of the Masechta, when dealing with makos cases, 3 or 23, machlokas, whether or not it should be done in front of a panel of 3 or a panel of 23. Now again, same story. So, if you maintain that makos has to be done in front of 23, and it was only a panel of 3, so was those makos warranted? Of course not. If makos are not warranted, what are you considered? You're considered a mazik. You just damaged another person. You have to pay that other person money. So once again, we'll get to now the case in which, if I subscribe to makos being done in 23, if a panel of 3 judged that case, so that is considered now, you assaulting another person illegally, you have to pay the money. If you subscribe to the viewpoint that 3 can create a panel for makos, so then the money is in fact, is not owed, because that makos were warranted. And again, you get now to the situation of money transferring hands from one person to another. Maybe it was legal, maybe it was illegal. And again, if he takes that money and uses it to be mekadesh a woman, so again, maybe his wife, maybe it's not his wife, and it can lead to nisar karis. Bein nega la nega, bein nega adam, nega batim, nega begadim, nega adam beplukta de Rabbi Yeshua v'rabbanan nan. Im baharis karnum le'sear lavan, tame. Im sear lavan karnum le'baharis, tahor. The Gemara takes us to the machlokas of tzaras, hair preceding the white spot preceding the hair. The order is important in terms of determining whether the person is considered a mitzara or not a mitzara. The rule very clearly laid out is that if the white spot comes before the hair, so then the white hair, the person's tame. If the opposite, the person's tahor. Safek, what if we don't know? Meaning the only thing the Kohen got to see was a white spot and a white hair, not knowing which comes first. So the Tanna Kama says, Tameh, and Rabbi Yeshua Amar Keah, my Keah Amar Rava Keah Tahor. Machlokas Tanayim, whether the person's Tameh or Tahor. We don't need much creativity over here. We know a person Tameh walking into the Beis HaMikdash is such an individual subject to Karis? The answer is absolutely yes. Is this person Tameh? Well, it depends who you hold like. If you hold like the Tanna Kama, the person's Tameh. If you hold like Rabbi Yeshua, the person's Tahor. So if the Zakin Ram is telling the person, you're Tahor, and he's going against the base and the rules that he's Tameh, and then he walks into the base of Mikdash, so that's an Issur Karis. Nige batim beplukta de Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon v'Rabbanan dinan. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon omer la'olam, ein habayi la'olam. Sorry. Ein habayi Tameh ad shira kishnei grisam ashtei avanim b'shtei kisalam b'karen zavis. Arko kishnei grisam v'rachva k'gris. An opinion that we also saw pretty recently in the Daf, in the 8th Perek, in terms of a house becoming Tameh and becoming a Tzara's house, so you need a super specific configuration where the spot on the house is in the corner and a perpendicular on two sides of the perpendicular of the wall. My Tameh de Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Ksiv Kiros, Ezu Kirshu Kikiros, Havi Omer Zer, Karen Zavis. It's a wall which is really two walls. So you have one person passing like that. You have another person passing against that position. So that person now may or may not be Tameh, depending on the Psak. That person then goes into the Beis HaMikdash. He either is or not going to be Chayav Kares. And again, a debate that can lead to an Issur Kares. And finally, Nege Begadim. Plukta de Rabbi Yochanan ben Avtomos v'Rabbanan detanya Rav Yonasan ben Avtomos Omer minayin top of pechasam and aleph lepricha bebegadim shehi tahora namra karcha v'gabachas ba'adam v'namra karcha v'gabachas bebegadim ma'alahalam parach bekulo tahor afkan parach bekulo tahor. And then, what if there is saras over the entire article of clothing? We know that when it comes to a person, counterintuitive, when a person is covered head to toe in saras, he's tahor. Is the same halacha going to be true by a beged? Subject to a debate. And again, here we go. If you take that position that the beged is tahor, so and you have now a zakin mame ruling like that position, so then that person is going to go into the Beis HaMikdash having come into contact with the beged. He thinks he's tahor because the zakin mame told him so. Meanwhile, could be that the halacha does not follow that position. The halacha is that by a beged, even if the entire beged is saras, the person's tameh, the person coming into contact with this tameh, he goes into the Beis HaMikdash, he's now chayev kares. So again, another debate that can result in an Issur Karis. And to be continued, the Gemara in Peches is also now going to finish off the rest of the Braisa, explaining how every case in the Braisa can be going like the Shita of Rebbe Meir.